Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. This summer, state legislators are studying accessibility to mental health services in South Dakota in a comprehensive, strategic way. State Senator Deb Soholt has spearheaded much of the efforts to address mental health issues in the state. She's also currently chairing the Telehealth and Telemedicine Task Force, which is one of five task force, right?
Correct. Yeah,
there we go. All right. The goal of this group is to examine how to best leverage telehealth and telemedicine to meet needs and save lives. And Senator Soholt joins us now in the SDPB Sioux Falls studios. Welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me back. And I just love how SDPB does all this great work of helping our citizens understand what's going on.
And you've been very generous with your time. And I always tell people, if you want to start from the beginning, if you're confused, go to listen.sdpb.org. Put Soholt in the search engine, and a lot of that stuff will come up where you've sort of walked us through over a period of time of where this all began and where it's going next. So people who maybe are coming in from the first moment, though, catch us up a little bit about Senate Concurrent Resolution 2 in this last legislative session.
Sure.
Where did we begin with this process?
Well, this was all based on the work that we did last summer on the mental health access overall and interim study, and trying to wrap your arms around where does everybody access mental health in the state of South Dakota. It's just a lot of depth and breadth to that work. So by the end, it was unrealistic to think that we could make appreciable change without changing some systems of how people access mental health. So that is where Senate Concurrent Resolution 2 came from, that we wanted to define so that we could get appropriated dollars for five particular areas of work that we really identified that if we could change that trajectory in South Dakota, we could change access for people and keep them closer to home and connected to community resources that help their mental health. So there's actually five task forces that were appropriated. One of the reasons we did it as a Senate Concurrent Resolution, you may wonder why not a legislative summer study? Because first of all, they would probably never be able to fund five as just a legitimate summer study content. Plus, we didn't want to leave it for chance of how some might be chosen by the executive board of the legislature. That's how summer studies are chosen. And then the third piece was we really wanted to have people that are in the trenches doing the groundwork on all of this to help to inform the solution, that the doers had to have the say in right. this, whereas summer studies are just made of legislators. So these five groups, the first one is looking at acute hospitalization and mental health. And we understood last summer that many people that have 5 days or less length of stay, if you will, for some mental health crisis that end up going down to the Human Services Center in Yankton would be better served if we could figure out how to work with the three acute care hospitals in the state, Rapid City Regional and Avera McKinnon in Sioux Falls and Avera St. Luke's in Aberdeen. That if we could embed those short stay, length of stay, acute experiences in a new way, we would save dollars, but also, more importantly, is people would be where they should be, closer connected to home. And then just all the hassle of all the way down to Yankton, and think about all these places in our state trying to get there to stabilize. The second group is really looking, and this is being, the first group is led by Representative Michael Dietrich out of Rapid City. The second group, led by Senator Solano, is looking at trying to define, Sioux Falls has really led the way on this whole triage center concept, that maybe you need somewhere to go for 2 to 3 days to restabilize and reconnect and to sort out what is this issue that's happening with you. So we jumped off of that idea of the triage center of Sioux Falls that's emerging and is looking at how can we develop that across the state on a regional basis connected with the community-based mental health centers. You don't need to go to an acute care hospital. You don't need to go to jail. That is the last place that we want people with mental health issues to go. But you do need to go somewhere so we can keep you safe and to try to understand what the situation is. The third group is leveraging as much as we can telehealth and telestrategies in trying to provide mental health access. And that's the group that I'm chairing. We just met for the first time yesterday. Really excited about this group. This is also based on the crisis intervention work that had been done very successful in Sioux Falls, where we found out that over 90% of the people that get a response from a crisis team in a mental health situation in their home do not have to leave their home. That is astounding to us because something happened. You're in a moment. Now you call law enforcement. If law enforcement can stay there to keep the situation safe, but back out and have a crisis debriefing person of skill to assess and understand what's going on, it's like emergency mental health in your home. So the first responders, whether that's law enforcement or the EMTs, we want to leverage that kind of success across the state. And we think we can do that in relationship to having like iPads where a virtual person comes in. Right. And so you have like 911 mental health and be able to keep people at home. And then again, connect them back with their own community-based resources. Now, if you look at the amount of people in South Dakota and people that might be in these situations, we believe we have a very, very good chance of making that happen because one hub could probably manage all those mental health crisis situations, you know, if we had like one person that's talented 24/7. Additionally, we're going to be looking at leveraging telehealth within that triage center concept. Like, how can we expand into community-based mental health centers to offer counseling, further assessment from a virtual basis and keep people closer to home and their support services. So I'm very excited about where we might head with the outcomes of our group. Then there is a fourth group led by Representative Jean Hunhoff out of Yankton that's looking at long-term care. Because right now in statute, if you would have a mental health situation and you're elder and you're on Medicaid, you could end up in Yankton for the rest of your life, the Human Services Center. We just don't think that's right. But we have to build capacity then within our current nursing home structure to be able to help with these behaviors and to be able to look at that differently. So that's going to take a longer term trajectory of implementation and recommendations and statute change. And then the final group is being led by Representative Tim Reed out of Brookings, and that's looking at community supports and how do people with chronic mental illness have housing over time, and then how do we support the caregivers, the family caregivers that are dealing with chronic mental illness with someone that they love or a good friend. We want to make sure that we have capacity and supports to keep them out of the acute care system.
So this group that you met for the first time this week,
yep.
It just seems, you know, when we look at one of my favorite things about this this story is, you know, I've been talking about it with you, with other people for a couple years now, and it seems like we're getting closer and closer. It hasn't gone away. People haven't given up on it. It's being followed through on. It wasn't just a trendy topic right now that the lawmakers talked about and then forgot about.
No, in fact, this is really connected with multiple efforts that have transpired since I've been in the legislature, where we're looking at child maltreatment, child sexual abuse, how does early childhood trauma start coming forward? And then we've got the opioid issues and what's happening with methamphetamine and people that are choosing chemicals based on how we have this convergence of stressors and who's more vulnerable than other people. And then how does that lead to mental health issues? Some of them are intertwined substance abuse and mental health. So all of those come together. They're not just isolated towers on their own. We have to regard and connect them. And what I'm really excited about is that we keep taking another piece of the work. And I'm actually starting to see how, as you know, a state, we're starting to merge these concepts, and we will be developing strength of statute, the laws that help to support the right thing to do. The criminal justice system is involved, and the things that we've done in adult justice reform and juvenile justice reform. So it's a very exciting time to see about how do we strengthen community? How do we have appropriate statutes of support? How do we keep people safe? But how do we ultimately help people get well?
What are some of the things that you covered in the very first meeting?
Oh, well, whenever I conduct a summer study, and I tell them, you know, if you watch my pattern, I'm just sort of the same. We always do what is kind of what I consider the state of the state, like what's really going on. So the first meeting or two, a meeting and a half, is really about gaining information, that we really can't understand the true gaps and what the solutions might be. However, what was really exciting yesterday is that we were hearing from like Avera's eCare, because they've really stepped out into this whole mental health arena and what's happening. In fact, they're doing a pilot that has been funded by a grant that's starting this fall of doing this iPad into law enforcement vehicles. And they'll help to really inform how does that work or how does that not work. We heard from our community-based mental health centers and all of the telehealth that they have developed. We pulled in Lutheran Social Services to talk about the expansion that they've done into their locations. So we're really trying to look at, you know, public and private and free enterprise and kind of what's happening and how do we not step on each other but potentiate what's happening. I said, you know, the interesting thing yesterday, I said, we just can't fight about the business principles of like mental health. There's enough for everyone. So if we can really, and I also instruct my group always that we're not going to talk about money, because the first time we say we don't have enough money, how could we ever afford it? Then we have blocked our innovation for solutions. I said, we'll first see the gap. Then we'll look at benchmark best practice, not only what we're doing in South Dakota, but what's happening in the nation and perhaps even in the world in connection to this. Then we look at what do we want to have happen? How do we envision a trajectory of meaningful change? then we start to figure out what statute do we need to support that, what do we start to change, and how do we fund it.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about this. I think you brought back to this touch point a couple times, which is keeping people close to home, keeping people in their home. And this seems like a very, South Dakota thing, a value. And it gets into this notion of social capital and who we are. And one of the problems of the stressors on people are it has to do with this loss of social capital. We want to preserve that in the state, don't we?
And I think we have to rebuild it in some sectors. And so when you think about people just don't do well when they're yanked out of their own environment, even if the environment isn't all that healthy. And so there has to be some kind of support that you can figure out to access, like someone that you know. We have to link you back with not someone that's across the state, and maybe they're helping you for that point in time, and they're doing a really great job at helping you. But then when you go back, and I don't know the connection for you and who those people are. So we, by virtual strategy, we now have a very real possibility of sorting this out. We are not going to be able to get the specialized workforce in all corners of our state. That is just a pipe dream. And so when people say, well, we need more people, we need to build more workforce, we need to entice more people, I'm like, stop, just stop. What we need to do is to figure out how do we leverage the top of the top expertise, whether that's psychiatry, psychology, crisis intervention, counselors and nurses that work in this field every day. How do we bring that benchmark wherever you are in the state of South Dakota? We also heard yesterday from the Bureau of Information Technology and where we're at in the governor's initiative in trying to get people better bandwidth, you know, that we do have some very remote places in South Dakota. And then we heard from people that are representing all of the, you know, telecommunication systems within our state. That happened kind of spontaneously. He happened to be in the room, and I said, well, hey, could you come up and talk? He was very gracious. But we're trying to understand where are all of, like, kind of our dead zones, and then what's the trajectory for improving that. But this is where we could get all hung up on the perfect getting in the way of the possible. And so I was like, hey, okay, so we're going to have X amount of, you know, one-off people, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I'm saying you're so remote, we can't do this thing for you in this remote location, so we're going to have to go old school, and we're going to have to take you to this location. But that will be more the rarity than the norm. So if we can build an algorithm of systems, and that's a, you know, a nursing term, right. Here's the pathway that we want to go first. We have a crisis situation. It's happening in the field. A sheriff has responded to this farm. You know, someone's talking about, I think I'm going to commit suicide. A wife has called. They're worried about their husband. Okay, now we have a situation where best practice would be to bring in the virtual crisis intervention professional to help assess and debrief that situation and find out, is this person safe to stay home or not? We know that in those systems, within 24 hours, they make a plan. And the plan is either executed or not. And then they even make a follow-up call within 24 hours to see kind of where's this at and what's happening. They also have knowledge of all the resources that exist within that area so that they can connect back and make a call. Mm-hmm. So that would be best practice. All right, let's say that our hotspot isn't working because we're like too remote and we don't have the bandwidth. Okay, what's the next thing? Now we're going to move you on to this regional triage center, which is much closer, to try to get that assessment. But it really protects our people out in the field. We have such wonderful sheriffs and law enforcement. They're just doing such a great job, but they can't also be expert at this. Mm-hmm. And so we want to help those, and we've seen the success in this in all of our telehealth initiatives within the state. I mean, if we can do e-emergency, we can do this. We can do e-mental health.
And some of the e-emergency stuff is pretty high tech.
Oh my goodness.
But, I mean, when you find out, we've done a couple of stories. Jackie Henry did a story on,
yes,
on e-care, and I was sort of blown away.
Well, and they were asking, asked yesterday in the meeting, they said, okay, in an e-emergency, like, what is the response time? Like, how soon do you have a professional in the room? Because they were talking about one emergency doctor handling 190 facilities. One. 190. Now, think of that economy of scale. And the answer was, well, it's within 30 seconds.
Wow.
30 seconds. And that's because of an entire team is there to respond. Nurses. So we want to find a way to do that wraparound service with psychologists and counseling and crisis debriefing nurses that are all available 24/7, but then also to build community capacity for that next step when we've got to, you know, okay, this is, we've triaged, but now we need to get you somewhere, but let's not take you to the Human Services Center in Yankton.
Right. It seems like people would be way more willing to call. I mean, yes. If you have an idea that, you know, there's a 90% chance that you're going to still stay in your home and you're just going to get services, you're more likely to reach out, because many people don't call because they're afraid of, you know, the denial comes into play a little bit.
Well, and you think, okay, you're going to go to jail. Right. I mean, being handcuffed and taken away has been somewhat of the alternative. And that is not against our law enforcement. I understand why that happened. Yeah. So we are really about trying to meaningfully change this trajectory. And I'm super excited to be a part of it, and the people that are at the table helping with solutions. And all of these task forces, just for the public to know, the five of us as chairs and the staff people that are in LRC that are helping us on the policy side, we are staying together through regular conference calls, so we're not tripping up on each other and we're not in different, you know, this crosses over into this bucket, and so I'm going to do this work, I'm going to get this data, I'll get that for you, you get this for me. And at the end, we envision bringing forward a statutory package. So it's not just like everyone is in isolation. We just knew that everyone needed to stay in a lane, because there's just so much to try to wrap your arms around.
What's next for this task force, for the group that you're working with?
We will be meeting again at the end of August. That's our next meeting. And so we have our meeting scheduled in August, September, October, November. And so we have the progression. I think, you know, I don't know when all the other dates are. Right. I do know that by the end of this week, everybody has teed off their group. And so we're having our first conference call next week to really talk about, okay, where are we at? What are we doing? You know, what's happening? What do we want to investigate? And so I think I love being at this stage of the work, because like last summer was just so much trying to get to understanding. Right. And we really became to understand how much money we're spending. Not good for the people. It's not even just about the money. But, you know, the littlest part should be this acute hospitalization thing.
Right.
We should be early intervening, and we really came to understand how much we're missing in prevention and early intervention. Yeah. So we're trying to tip that on its head and have that be this significant foundation where we have less and less crisis happening.
All right. Tell me a little bit about from a leadership perspective, and you've alluded to some of it. You know, we're not talking about, you know, the money right now, because it sort of squashes innovation. What are some of the other things that you do as a leader to kind of keep? I know in the past you've said, don't look ahead to what you think the solution is just yet. Let's get the information. How do you guide a group in this sort of complex policy work that's also really urgent and important?
Well, it's a joyous process. If you're really working to try to build consensus of thought around innovation and idea. And so I try to hold people back, and I've led a lot of summer studies now in the last 7 years. And at the beginning, when people didn't know my style, they just got really frustrated, because they were ready to start writing statute and they wanted to have immediately jump to solution. And I'm like, we are not even there yet. Like, we're not even there yet. So I have followed in all of my work a process of, first, you have to get people to kind of an open mind. Okay. And so you have to think about, how do you know more? Then you have to get to open heart. Like, what are we really willing to think about our people? And then to open will. And once you get to open will, the solutions come really quickly. But it takes dialogue and a deep dive into the subject to have that happen.
Right. We have invited every committee head to come to this program and talk about the work that we're doing. We've had a few come on already, and you can find those on our website. And you are welcome back anytime, as well as the others. We'll keep following this as long as it is a story.
Well, we just really appreciate it being highlighted, and we appreciate that your listeners are engaged and interested. I think really going after some of these challenges that we have in mental health and providing new supports is just entirely doable. So thanks for having me on.
State Senator Deb Soholt, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.